Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Andrew on the board. We have the Professor Kevin.
How you doing, Thomas?
Doing all right. Hanging in there. I'm ready for the 95-degree day. I don't know what I have to do to get ready, but I'm ready. I actually have a luncheon engagement about 4 or 5 blocks away in the Loop, and I'm trying to weasel my nephew to give me a ride over there. I don't mind the walk, but boy, I don't want to walk in like a sweat bomb either.
So you're not going to do the outdoor dining, huh?
I don't know. I'm a guest, so let's hope not. When you're a guest, S&P futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up 34. So that's the story today. Mortgage demand flatlines at low levels as mortgage rates hit 4-week high, but now the 30-year and the 10-year both come off their highs a little bit, so might get a little bit of drop in mortgages next week. Not much, but we don't seem to be able to. We keep trying to break through this 5% on the 30-year and 4.5% on the 10, and every time we do, it comes right back down a point, and then it turns around and goes back up. So I think a lot of that has to do with the back and forth with the Fed and raising and lowering interest rates and all the banter that's going on there. I'm on the camp that says if they pour enough money in to lower the short-term rates anything severely, all they're going to do very, very swiftly is raise the long-term rates. But that would be an old monetarist talking. You know, we'll see if that actually happens. But I don't think... doesn't seem like there's a lot of understanding from the both the Secretary of the Treasury and Mr. Trump that the Fed doesn't really control the long-term stuff, and you got to be careful about the inflation. But you know what, Kevin, it was so long ago, maybe nobody even remembers that. So this could be, it hasn't happened for so long, but the last thing we need is some kind of a spike in inflation expectations that brings the long-term rates to 7. I don't know how we come back from that. I really don't. I don't know what the federal government's going to do with their debt levels. I mean, you don't want that to happen, and it seems like they're playing with it. I don't know why, but I don't know if it's been so long, or they just don't get it, or they hope it doesn't happen, or you never know what the collective mentality is. I mean, you can. So I don't know what they're thinking on that. I continue to. I don't know why, but sort of dig through on the. Epstein stuff, and boy, Kevin, I have questions on a gazillion different levels. I know you and I talk all the time on trying every level of the chessboard, and these names that keep popping in there with all this money, I keep thinking, good Lord, is it company money? Is it their money? Is it before tax money? Is it after tax money? I mean, where do they all get it? I mean, who's that guy, Mag? What's his name? The guy who used to own the group that owned Victoria's Secret? He seems to be the original founder of all this stuff. And some of the stuff you hear is just like, I don't know if you heard the part about Epstein. Evidently, somehow he got a job as a math teacher without knowing any math, which is always interesting. I did hear a story here in the suburbs that one of the chief administrator of the school district's son got a job as a swimming coach, and the guy couldn't swim enough to save somebody in a pool if he had to. I'm like, that's kind of dangerous. Sort of like a math teacher that doesn't know any math, right? So somehow or another, he ends up in this firm that's kind of he was never a registered investment advisor, never had a Series 7 or anything like me. Somehow he became this guy in this firm that specialized in, like, money laundering. How in the hell, Kevin, is we're on Earth.
One of those.
Yeah. How do you end up? I mean, I don't know if the firm was ever registered or what the deal was there or what. How would PTI ever specialize in money laundering? Where every time somebody brings something in, we're the police. How can we specialize? How do you even do so? If there's reincarnation, I want to get one of these slimy genes where, you know, for a guy who's supposed to be pretty smart, I never think of anything like this. And what's wrong with me or you?
never watched Breaking Bad, did you?
Evidently, a little bit of it, but you know, it just.
They had some pretty good setups for money laundering. Just have to have the right kind of business, that's all.
Well, I mean, I know there's people, I suspect...
You own yourself a bear watch, lots of cash there.
But how do you call yourself an investment advisor firm and do it? I mean, so, then evidently, one guy was saying that at some point in his career early on, he either sent a letter out or somehow communicated with... At the time, there were like 100 people in the world that had $1 billion. And somehow or another, he sends... I guess a letter, Kevin? I don't know how the hell you communicate to all these people saying, I'll manage your dough. Okay, then. But there only were, you know, there weren't very many people at $1 billion in what? When did this guy get started? 1990 or something? I mean, so then the guy from Victoria's Secret, I'll get his name here for a second, Wexner or something, he like takes him up on it. And he's making him some dough, and who knows what else he's doing. And he ends up becoming the guy's. Now, if you open up an account at PTI and you say, okay, for purposes of the Protect and Index program or for, you know, a concentration issue, or it could be your whole account, you'll say, I want you to manage it. Like Dan and I to have. So we would get what they call limited power of attorney, only to deal with the stuff in that account. And we don't usually. If you bring in 10,000 shares of Exxon, I've never sold the Exxon and bought something else, even though technically I could do it. But that's limited power of attorney. I would always call you first and say, "Do you want to lighten up on your Exxon? Do you not?" And those kinds of things. But he evidently gave him full power of attorney, which means I could sell your Exxon and go out and buy an apartment building with it, and actually have charge of your checkbook. I don't ever want that, and B, I don't know how you'd even get something like that. So he ended up being this Wexner guy's, and he's the guy who gave him I guess he gave him use of his one or two big properties in Ohio that he had, and he gave him all the money for the place in Manhattan. It was their place. It was supposedly was like the biggest. Whatever you want to call it, it was a townhouse. How do you have a townhouse that ends up being the biggest, like, piece of property in Manhattan or something? But evidently it was. And I'm curious, appalled, what I am. And the thing of it is, the more you get into it, the more it kind of doesn't really lead to Trump at all. It leads. I mean, he's in the queer. A lot of the queer shots with the young kids, but there's no evidence that he ever was part of this money trail or anything. Maybe he was.
I think if he was, do you think with everything else that they've tried to throw at him over in recent years, do you think that they would have sat on that?
You know what, Kevin? Yes. Reason why I say that is despite... You know, everybody and, you know, people that are like to fight on both sides back and forth. Despite all that, there seems to be somewhat of a detente among both sides, even though people refuse to believe this, that they never go after the money of the other side. I mean, you're just because the Republicans or the Democrats have control of Senate doesn't mean they immediately put up a Senate investigation over the other guy's ways they got money. I mean, they never do that.
But it isn't the money. If there were a sex scandal there, you
can't open it.
That would have been. I just have to believe that would have been leaked, even if they didn't leak anything else.
I don't think you could have leaked a piece of this. Because once you do, I'm just kind of keeping track for the show, not that I. Once you get going, every one of these guys, they're mostly guys, the podcast people, the world, everybody's got a picture, everybody's got a report, and some of the stuff, I don't think you can contain it. I mean, the one lady was complaining, she was allegedly employee of whatever Epstein's organization was, him and the girl's name. She filed a police report in 1996, 2006. I mean, some of the stuff is there. I don't think he can contain it once it goes out there. I don't think you could, that Biden could blow the whistle on Trump and not have Clinton and the Prince of England involved. I don't think he could have done that. I mean, I don't see how you could contain something like that. It's too damn big.
It seems like there's enough floodgates open that, you know, that what's there to contain it will come out. Look, anyways, yesterday Senator Wyden from I forget what state he is. He said they have evidence that there's, he said, 4,725 wire transfers adding up to nearly $1.1 billion flowing in and out of just one of Epstein's bank accounts. He said that's more than 4,000 potential lines of investigation right there. And then there were a whole bunch of other accounts. So, you know, it's all there. So it either has to be incredibly well guarded. People are fearing for their lives if they expose things. Or it's just there's so many well connected
axes. We'll be south side. We'll say axes.
Yeah, you're going total south side on me. Yeah. You know, just like a Matthew Boyd inning last night. 1-2-3.
Yeah, 1-2-3. Well, I mean, Kevin, I was on the way in. I was, you know, thinking about what we were going to talk about, and you know, it comes down to, and you never want to be in this position. I mean, hopefully you and I never are, but there is a group of people. I tell you what, this could be the first thing in the last God knows how many years that seems to totally unify the left and the right. How creepy this all is. And how they don't like the fact that some people seem above the law. But now, you just mentioned the 4,100. But I think if I sent that to you, maybe you got it on your own, but I sent that to you. But this, he was part of, what group did he say he was in? It was like a bipartisan committee. How many years ago that reviewed it? That were allowed to see the evidence of some kind? What was the cause of that?
Because you have been following it a hell of a lot closer than I have. So, you know, I just get what I stumble across. So.
Well, I mean, every time I stumble across something, it's there's a new fact in there someplace. Even some podcast guy that you never heard of seems to pull out a picture. You're like, where the hell did he get that? But they seem to be all over the place. Because there was a lot of people involved. I mean, when did we talk about the Wired magazine phone logs and the people going from one island to the other in a boat that were too stupid to keep their phone in their pocket? I mean, here's the whole thing, Kevin. And you and I, if we were, can you imagine us arguing as president and co-president? We'd probably have some people involved, you know, intelligent people, hopefully. We'd say, okay, what's it going to take to really look at this stuff and where this money came from? Was it government money? Was it pre-tax money? Did the guy remodel this, you know, this thing in Manhattan and Victoria's Secret money? Was that shareholder money? What's it going to take? It's one thing to say there's 4,100 wire transfers. It's quite another to investigate 4,100 wire transfers. What's the size of the, I'll use the term police force or investigative unit, that we need to go through this? And by the way,
nowadays, what did you learn?
I said go through it. I mean, somebody has to evaluate every single one and say, who did this come from and where? Oh, by the way, it came from an account in Morocco. All right, who's got the account in Morocco? I mean, whose name's on the account? Do we even get that information from Morocco? Who the hell knows? I mean, you know, there's a million, it's not just slip it to AI. I mean, it's probably easier to do.
I'm not suggesting you slip it to AI. This is just standard analytical tools. We're now, because it's all in the database, you can just chase it, and then you can pick out the ones that are most suspicious or the ones that are most worthy of scrutiny, and then from there, you may have, then you manually dig into them. But you don't necessarily have to go through them one by one. I mean, that's one of the frustrations that I have. Well, I actually have it with a lot of things, and if you allow me to go off in a couple of
tangents. Go right ahead, because I do it all the time. Your turn.
Because one of the things, you know, take voters, you know, voting and signature verification. Do you know how long we have been capturing and verifying signatures in the banking world to flag suspicious checks, you know, fraudulent signatures on checks, that's what, 25 years.
Kevin, how do you guys do that when mine doesn't look anything like it did when I was 30?
Because they will evolve. They track the evolution of them over time too.
Okay.
So, you know, what your signature on a check looked like 10 years ago versus what it looks like now, that will change gradually. And so it isn't hard for your models to be able to verify that. And all it does, all that they really do is they will flag the suspects. They don't reject the checks. They flag the suspects, and then they take those suspects and they queue them up for somebody to actually scroll through and look at them. And do the verification process. Whereas before, you used to have to outsort all the high dollar ones because that was where all the risk was, and then on the high dollar ones, and somebody would have to manually go through each one. Now you only flag the suspects. That's one example. But we don't do it for voting. You know, we're not willing to do that for voting. Similarly,
by the way, they did that. They did that for me. I went and signed a thing, and I signed Tom Howell, and they go, let me see your driver's license. They used to sign it as Thomas. They checked me.
Right, they do, but how about mail-ins?
Well, I don't do mail-ins. I'm always suspicious of mail-ins, by the way.
Yeah, well, but you know, some states have extensive mail-in balloting, and then if somebody wants to contest a vote, they can't. And they're just failing to use what I consider commodity technology. So that's an example of doing this. We saw the same thing with and a lot of those analytics guys are still involved when it comes to Doge. They haven't all gone away. How did they chase down where a lot of that NGO money was going, for example?
It's just
simple. Take the database and run the query.
Well,
and,
yeah, but the part that's not simple, Kevin.
Or another example is compliance with subpoenas. How many times have you seen, it's going to, you subpoena records, it's going to take us, we have to go print them all. We have to go print everything off, and then we deliver you 1,000 pages of printed material. Where you don't need to do that.
You're focusing, which is good, by the way. You're focusing on the process. That's not the problem here. The problem is, what if it turns up people we don't want to expose? That's the problem.
Well, I'm kind of in that if the truth hurts, it should.
All I'm trying to say is, it's always kind of interesting and fun to argue with somebody where you agree with everything they say. You know we have the same background. You know I feel the same way you do. I'm just saying this is the way people do stuff. It's the way people didn't have a full investigation of people who, you know, front ran trades on the CBOE. You were afraid who you were going to find, even though they were about as straight as an organization as you can get. It's everywhere. I mean, can you imagine?
That's a different problem, and right now we have a lot.
No, it's not. It's the same problem on a much bigger scale. What if we find out the sleaziest firm happens to be a guy who's sitting on is the firm of a board guy that you're sitting next to every week? Nobody wanted that.
First, I'd move my seat.
Well, I'd move my, yeah, especially, but what I'm trying to get to here is that the rage of somebody like me, and I think you know what, I'm with a lot of MAGA people on this. That I mean, I
don't even know what MAGA people are.
So. Well, what I'm saying, people that are considered, you know, on the right versus people that are woke or whatever. I'm saying I'm with the extreme right on this. Because I'll tell you what, Kevin, if you went out, this is not true, but if, suppose Kevin collected older cars and you went out and sold your, whatever, 75 Corvette to some guy for 20 grand and he whips you off 20 grand in Benjamins, that would be hundos. You know what, Kevin? You're a friggin' leper. You can't give that money to PTI. If you go to a bank, there'll be one on each shoulder and one up your behind. Where did you get the dough? What are you doing? I guess you could go out to dinner for the next 3 years with your money, but you are a friggin' leper, and you did nothing wrong. And yet we've got 4,100 wire transfers coming in from Moscow and God knows where else, and we just can't seem to look at it. And I tell you what, I don't care if you're the most progressive or the most right-wing, that bothers people on both sides.
And we are arguing, we are laying out slightly different issues, and I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're right. What I'm saying is the ability to investigate those is it wouldn't be that difficult. So we would, if we were inclined to investigate, and that's different. That's where you and I are, you know, on a little bit different attacks on this.
Oh no, I'm 100% with you. If we're inclined, could we do it? Yeah,
not that hard to dig into it.
Well,
and it's not something that's going to take 3 years to dig into. It's something that would get, you know, that could get done in a matter of, you know, days or weeks.
But then it gets allegedly the Attorney General in office is now heading off to talk to, what's her name? I never can pronounce her first name. Epstein's groper, female groper in charge, yeah. And now he's sending, what's his name? He's sending Todd Blanche. Well, Todd Blanche was Trump's personal attorney. You can't do that, Kevin. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, but I'm saying, you know, how can I give a Southside versus maybe other place? Let's just say I knew your mom pretty well, obviously not as much as you did, and you knew my mom pretty well. Neither one of those moms would ever have been shy about checking out your room when you were growing up. I think there's probably moms around that don't want to do it because they're afraid of what they might find. I don't think either one of us had a mom like that. I know I didn't. They don't want to know, Kevin. They have a feeling. No, you and I would not want to be the two knuckleheads in the Oval Office. See, we have whatever we have. Two guys in the Oval Office. We don't want somebody to bring in a list and have 15 captains of industry, 12 of which give us money for the campaign, 15 senators, one on each, you know, divided down the middle on who's right and who's left, representatives, a bunch of people from overseas, a whole bunch of Arabs we just had in white in the Oval Office cutting a deal with. We don't want any part of that. Nor do we want to dispatch the... You're right. It's probably not 100 people to investigate, the 40 people to investigate and draw who these people are and ask all these questions. Do you give them subpoena power? What do you do? I mean, Kevin, it's a bleep storm.
Maybe I'd be more inclined to go scorched earth in the last year of my presidency.
But I mean, the other issue is, and this I give, you know, Bush. I don't know. I don't think he was a very good president. I don't know what his programs would have been if he didn't have to deal with 9/11 for 3 years. I mean, maybe he had all kinds of good ideas. I don't think he did, but I mean, you get distracted. And how distracted would we want this to be? I mean, Trump has an agenda. I don't agree with a lot of it, but the fact is he has one, and people think some people think he's doing the right thing, some don't. But this is, if he spends 6 hours a day screwing around with this, it detracts from the other stuff he wants to do. Do we want, if it was you and I, would we want that to happen? Probably not. I mean, there's a million different levels on this. How much of it is tax evasion? I have to believe that the stuff that this guy gave Epstein, there seems to be a few people. Was there gift taxes paid? I'm going to take the under on that, right? What now? Was the labor and the stuff for the big pad in Manhattan? Was that Victoria's Secret money? Was it bonus money? Did the guy pay taxes on it? Was it considered an asset of Victoria's Secret? What about the $20 million for the island? Where did that come from? Was it after tax, before tax? Whose was it? Kevin, there's a zillion questions here. And they only get bigger the more you dig, right?
Yeah, so are you ultimately saying you're pessimistic that any of it's going to be...
Oh, none of it's going to happen. None of it's going to get out there. You know that.
Well, and the reason I'm asking, because that's sort of where I am, and that's why I'm not, you know, full bore sinking my teeth into it, you know, as things may come across my screen, and I'll look at it and go, well, that's interesting. But because I'm a skeptic that anything is going to come of it, I just don't spend a lot of time being concerned about it. I know there's a lot of people that are, and I certainly understand it. It's appalling. There's nothing to like about it, and I really would like to see, have it all see the light of day. I just don't think it's
well. If, every time I hear of a friend getting audited by the IRS or something, or every time my brother has to go and check you out on Interpol because you're a new client, it bothers the living bejesus out of me. On that level, I'll never forgive it, because it's ongoing, Kevin. It's on every day. If you walked in with cash tomorrow, we have to make sure that if you send a check to us or wire money in, that the bank account is coming from the same place as your name. Do you think for a second these wires that came from Moscow into this guy's bank account were his name? You think the bank checked up on that? But I guarantee the bank's checking up on you. I mean, we can't live as a society with two chunks of laws for different people forever. And I think, to the extent that I think we're breaking apart here, that's probably one of the main reasons. So do I like it? Hell no. Plus, you and I'm not sure our morals are the same as most people. But, you know, we were in an Irish Catholic ghetto. Everyone went to church, unless you played softball and you ditched it. The just watching some of these films of these guys with these young girls, for me, Kevin, the creep factor is off the chart. I mean, there's one where they had a beauty pageant, but it wasn't just on a stage. Every one of these young girls in these scanty little leotards were coming into this room where Trump and a bunch of other people, and actually there were women there too, so it wasn't just all guys, are sitting there, and the girls are coming in and, you know, trotting back and forth and performing, and I'm sitting there going, I could no longer sit there than anybody. And I know it's just not a thing here. I mentioned yesterday I was in Ohio. I think I was giving a speech for the guys who run the Ohio State Trust Fund about using long-term options and blah blah blah. So was given like a three-hour lecture there. And I was staying in this hotel, and I wake up. I go to get back to the hotel, change into jeans so I could fly home. All of a sudden, I see all these young girls. I mean, they're like 15, Kevin. They're wandering by in these little leotards. I'm going, what the hell is this? I said to somebody, what is that? And they go, well, it's a beauty pageant. And I said, they're not even, they're 14 or 15. Why are you doing that? I mean, it's like, girls that age don't need to be trotting around in front of other people competing with their bodies, for God's sake. I mean, it creeped me out so much. And the guy's looking at me like, what's the problem? We do that all the time. And I'm going, maybe here you do. So my creep factor is very low. I mean, let's put it that way. There's one yesterday with...
What I touched yesterday, you remember that the case of JonBenet Ramsey?
The little girl
that, was abducted, and I don't think they ever solved the case. I believe to this day they have their suspicions. But my goodness, that she was probably 6 years old?
Yeah.
Or something like that, and they had her all tarted up and out there, and everybody, oh, it's so cute. No, it's not.
Yeah, no, it's not. Well, the picture with the prince with his arm around some 16-year-old. I mean, I the thought of me putting my arm around a 16-year-old, ugh. You know, just but that's a big thing. I mean, New York. I mean, the you know Trump group was all over these beauty pageants, and I just assumed beauty pageants started at 18 to 21. Boy, talk about how naive I am. Evidently, they start what, like 12,
or younger,
or younger. And I'm like, I don't know, Kevin. It's just that it makes me shiver sitting here in the studio. Why do people like that?
I think about it, you know, locally, you know, a lot of times I think of like in St. Joe, Michigan, their annual Blossom Parade. Part of that is, you know, there's a beauty pageant. And a lot of like high school kids are in that. And so, you know, Miss Blossom Time or whatever it is named. And, you know, riding down in the car with, you know, the runners up and in their separate cars. This is all, you know, it's all part of the culture in some places. And, you know, I assume that there's a certain amount of innocence in it. But what they're really doing is they're building the pageant circuit so that when you get to that Miss America, Miss Universe, you know, Miss Illinois, Miss, you know, Miss Indiana and so on, you know, all of those. They're not new. Nobody entered that as, you know, I guess you will find some people who are like in college and they say, oh, well, there's scholarship money. I think I'll enter and see what happens. Yeah, I know there's some of that. But in a lot of cases, it's simply a matter of, you know, someone's been on the circuit for a long time.
Well, our girl Jessica, she went for Miss Illinois and I think she was like middle of the pack. Beautiful girl. She didn't even think about that till she was 22.
Right. So, yeah, so I know there is a certain amount of that, too, and that's not everybody. But a lot of these girls, I'm sure Jessica was competing against a lot of girls.
Excuse me, I just dropped my microphone.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I know. The mic drop moment. I'm sure she was competing against a lot of people who have been working on their pageant skills for 10 years.
I can't imagine. When you say pageant skills, all of a sudden I'm going, uh-oh. Now we wander into the creep factor. What skills are you talking about? God, I don't want to go there. But the
well, you got to master that little hand wave that goes with it. You know that one.
Oh yeah, yeah. To be involved in this stuff. I mean, one of the guys who used to, I don't know if you ever met him, but he was he traded for me for a while. And matter of fact, I gave him away at his wedding in Denmark, of all things. In Denmark, the father of the groom gives away the groom, not the father of the bride giving away the bride. So his father was dead. His stepfather lived in Arizona.
He's kicking the low life out of the house, is what you're
evidently
saying.
So I was the guy who got to pass him off to the lovely Annalisa, and we went to Denmark and had a nice time. And boy, talk about a culture clash between our guys and those guys. But he hung around. Annalisa was a model, and she was a little older. She wasn't. I bet she came over here when she was 17, Kevin, maybe. But all the girls who in the Chicago area was a very close knit group. They all kind of lived together. They all worked together. Tell you what, you think that modeling is glamorous? It's a 6-to-6 job, and you better not have a burger the night before, because if you got one little bump on you, they don't want you that day.
Oh yes, rife with cutthroat competition.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Eating disorders. It's not a good lifestyle.
But he was he somehow was involved in a group more than anybody needs to know. But he shall we say he was available for booty calls. And he always had the freezer stacked with about 6 flavors of ice cream. Because they wouldn't eat dinner, but they wanted their ice cream. If you had a trade between dinner and chocolate ice cream, that was the choice. What did the lady who was a counselor on Star Trek: The Next Generation? Men will never understand the relationship between women and chocolate, or something like that. Anyway, what did you think of? Poor Suzuki the other night that hits himself in the balls with the ball and they call him out.
Yeah, and they call him out on that. Yeah, that was, actually, when it comes to home plate umpires, I don't think I've seen anybody get screwed over more by various kinds of umpires' calls than, say, a Suzuki.
Me too.
I don't know what they have against him, but you know, every strike three call that's, you know, two baseballs outside the strike zone, he seems to be the victim.
And he never bitches. He never complains.
Yeah, he's starting to show a little more emotion. You know, you got to master the language before you curse people out.
Well, you can curse in your language. Nobody even knows you're cursing.
That you can do. So that was just like the most egregious instance the other day. Hey, but they're back in first place today, so that's a good thing.
How did since you used to hail from Milwaukee, did anybody think the Brewers were this good starting the season?
No, I don't think so. They lost some key players and they did not start the season very hot. But I do think that people really understand that the Brewers have a good organization, a lot of depth, always have solid players at every position, that they have just, over the last 8 to 10 years, have been a really, really good baseball organization. But they, in many ways, they represent the Oakland A's, you know, at the height of Billy Beane, the Moneyball stuff, before everybody else caught on to the types of players that they were going after, where a lot of what they do works really, really well over a 162 game season. But ultimately, if you're going to succeed in the playoffs, it's a much smaller sample size. So it's like if you're card counting is not going to necessarily win you the next hand, but it will win you a lot of hands. I think what you see with the Brewers and why they haven't been as successful in the playoffs is they really haven't very often had that one or two guys in the lineup that can get hot and carry your team. So you always need an X factor come the shorter series. But
well, you also need the three pitchers.
Well, in 62 games, they have a team that is built to compete, and they do a really nice job with it.
Well, I forget who does the. I got stuck watching. I can't remember, Kevin. It was ESPN or Fox. One of the weekly games, because I think the Cubs played in the afternoon, and they were talking about the teams that they would fear in the playoffs, and three or four of them weren't even in the wild card yet. They were saying, well, these guys are like Baltimore. They said if everybody comes back from injury, they've got three pitchers nobody wants to face. So if they somehow scratch into the last wild card spot, they're a factor. They didn't have the Cubs. They did not say the Cubs were anybody fears. Now I'm not thinking maybe that's wrong, but the maybe if Steele was still here, they would. But they don't.
I think they worry a lot about hot pitching, and that's probably was driving what they said. Who's got the team that can have the hot pitcher? I mean, think of it like when the Diamondbacks won the World Series with. Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling. I mean, those two guys just pitched their butts off over the course of the World Series, and that won them, and they just survived with everybody else that they had. So, you know, that's what I mean by saying the playoffs are, you know, who's the X factor in the playoffs? Because, you know, the most dominant team doesn't necessarily win when the other team gets the really hot player going.
Well, the White Sox, and they just celebrated their World Series victory in 2005, right? 20 years ago?
2005, yep.
And the interesting part there, and you know, this is not a slam on the Sox, because you can't control these things, but in all three of the series, the opposing team's best pitcher got hurt in game one, right?
Well, yeah, and they also, what was it, the ALCS? They had all four pitchers pitch complete games.
Yeah. I'm stunned. You know, give us a second, but I want to talk to you about some of these interest rates and some of this other stuff, and why the market continues to go flying up here.
Got Russell for that.
But other stuff's flying up as well. I don't get how. I know it's maximum velocity pitch, damn near every pitch, which I don't think either one of us agree with. But how is it when guys used to pitch 120 pitches every fourth day? And now we're only pitching 75 or 80, but we need 4 days rest. That I don't get. I mean, one of the last interviews I had with I heard about with Sparky Anderson, and he had been retired for a while, and he came back and he said, So what would you do different than people are doing today? He goes, if I only expect the guy to go six innings, I only need four starters. Six innings every fourth day, you should be able to do that. You don't need 4 days rest if you're only going to pitch 80 pitches. He goes, well, if you're only going to go six innings, you need more people in the bullpen. I want that extra guy there. Why do I need a fifth starter if it's every fifth game, including days off? He goes, that's crazy. I will
offer a couple of thoughts about that just to temper it a little bit, because I agree. I totally appreciate the craft of pitching, and you know I love watching Shota. I like watching Imanaga pitch just for that reason. As an example, he's just a clinic on how to do it. And of course, the ultimate in my adult lifetime would have been Greg Maddux.
Mark Burley was close.
And Burley was there too, yeah. So I always love watching those kind of guys pitch. So I'm very biased in that direction. I will say that there were a lot of pitchers back in the day before they knew about, you know, ulnar collateral ligaments, and they knew, you know, what's the shoulder ailment that they
have.
You knew if
it was ruptured.
They knew if it was really bad, but in reality, a lot of guys' careers ended because of dead arms. You know, there were a lot of guys that did not, you know, we remember the ones that pitched 14 years or something like that, but we don't remember the guys that came and went.
Yep.
And a lot of those guys were just we couldn't diagnose them at the time. And so I don't know that much has changed. Or as much has changed as our memories would make us think have changed. Let me put it that way. There were guys who flamed out for the same reasons. They just couldn't handle, you know, they couldn't handle the workload. Now they get their Tommy John surgery, or they get their, you know, they get their shoulder surgery, and they sit out a year, and then they come back.
I think they're doing more than shoulder surgeries. I watched that guy Hill pitch last night. That guy couldn't throw 89 when he was 25.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think he, every winter, he's off to Europe for the stem cell treatment, would be my guess, or he's here or someplace. I think a lot of guys are doing that. One of my clients told me that, this is 15 years ago. He said, why do you think these quarterbacks are still playing in the NFL? Because they're all going to Europe and getting stem cell treatments in their shoulder. I don't know. But it is interesting, Kevin, when you talk about, you know, drugs, and obviously, you know, the Sammy Sosa kind of thing is off the chart. But here's a quick story. When John and I were on The Score, we never had to go into the studio. So very rarely did we come into contact with any of these people. So, of course, one night they invite us to a skybox at Sox Park. And John, of course, doesn't go. And he goes, you got to go to represent us. And I go, well, where are you going? Anyway, so I found out our producer was going, Cyrus. So he picks me up, and off we go. And we get there, and of course, he wanders off to talk to his buddies a second after we're there, and I'm sitting there by myself. I don't know a soul. And one of the overnight guys knew who I was, and he comes over and starts talking to me. Well, the two, I think they were idiots, they had Steve Stone totally monopolized for like up to the eighth inning until finally they leave. Steve Stanner and I go over and say hello. And I said, I got to ask you one question about one game. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I was watching this game. You were pitching for the Cubs. And you had a no-hitter going to like the eighth inning, but you had walked about seven guys. And finally, they took you out, and it was, you know, great hue and cry about what about the no-hitter. He goes, well, I remember that game. I said, how do you remember the game? He goes, well, that was a very unusual game. I had taken two different kinds of painkillers, and I didn't realize that they somehow screwed you up if you took them both together. He said, I couldn't see the signs. He goes, you know, I'm throwing a ball real hard.
He was just the prescription version of Doc Ellis throwing a no-hitter.
Yeah, and he says that the catcher was some nondescript name. I remembered at the time because I used to watch the Cubs all the time. He goes, the guy couldn't hit. He couldn't throw very well. He goes, but he was by far the best receiver in all my years of baseball I've ever come across.
Well, that sounds like Hector Valenzuela.
So he comes out to the mound, and he goes, Steve, what's going on? He goes, I can't see the signs. This is before, you know, the electric sign thing. And the guy says to me, just throw whatever you want, I'll catch it. And Steve goes, you got to be kidding. He goes, trust me. He goes, I'm winging him in there. He didn't know it was a curve or a fastball, and he's catching everything. He goes, he was that good. He goes, but finally by the seventh inning, I had thrown so many pitches, but my shoulder didn't hurt because I had both of these painkillers going, and I left it. He says, we won, and everybody wondered, but that was an odd game. He goes, it was all because I took the wrong drugs. God, really?
So it's not like... The reason I bring up Hector Valenzuela is I remember it was a long time ago now, I saw an interview with Greg Maddux, and he was talking about some of the great catchers he had to work with in his career, and the interviewer sort of made the quip about, and don't forget Hector Valenzuela, and Hector was a hitter, but he wasn't a very good defensive catcher, and Maddux gave it a laugh, and then, you know, a little pause, and he said, but you know one thing? Hector could hit, and Hector understood hitters, and he called a great game. He could, you know, he really could sit there and put down the signs for what's really going to keep this guy off balance, because he understood how hitters think. So that's why I brought it up, is that, and leave it to Greg Maddux to find the value in another player.
Well, the guy who are one of our favorite people who has passed recently. By the way, Andrew's going to try and get some Black Sabbath for the break. One of our favorite people is Bob Uecker. And all he did was downplay his career. I remember way back, they were in Milwaukee, and Bob, Pat Hughes, said to Ron Santo, God, was Bob as bad as he said? And Ron goes, that's a load of crap. He goes, he couldn't hit very well, but he was an extremely good second string catcher. He had a great arm, and he was a good receiver. He knew how to call the game. He goes, don't kid yourself. You hung around the big leagues for that period of time, you're good.
Yeah, oh yeah, and he knew how to catch a knuckleball too.
Yeah. Why didn't we? If we had to go back,
because he caught Bob Horner. Do you remember? You remember what he said when they asked him how you catch a knuckleball?
No.
So it's real easy. You wait till it stops rolling, you pick it up.
Well, you know who was the guy that he did the Olympics? He was the catcher that became the really good announcer. What the hell's his name?
Joe Arizola?
No, the big guy from the Cardinals. He's like 6'4".
McCarver?
McCarver.
He went to my high school.
Yeah. Russell? Yeah, McCarver. He said
Rusty McCarver and I grew up and played Little League together.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's the funny thing about Tim McCarver, he went to my high school. They wanted to retire his number, and he couldn't remember what number he wore in high school. And I just, whenever guys are reliving their glory days as high school athletes, I just kind of snicker to myself and think about McCarver's like, I don't even know what number I
wore. Well, it's got to be in the yearbook, you would think.
They couldn't find a picture where they could see the number.
Really?
Yeah. So, and we went to the De La Salle school down in Memphis. So,
but he said one of the secrets, Kevin, is that a lot of the guys, their knuckleball would actually die at the plate. So he said, I would back up, you know, a foot and just let it drop into my mitt. How weird is that? Hey, I got a trivia question for you, baseball dudes. How many of the single-digit Yankee numbers, how many of those are retired?
Well, I'm guessing damn near all of them.
Russell?
Are they all retired, but other people could wear them now?
No, nobody can wear them.
Okay, even though they're retired.
Actually, there's 10 of them, because there's two number eights. There's Yogi and somebody else.
That's what that's where my little confusion came from.
Yeah, there's two number eights.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that they
I knew there was one number that had been retired twice, and that's why I was like, well, then they can, you know, that maybe they pull them back out.
Well, the Cubs had the same thing with Maddux and Jenkins, right, Kevin?
I think so, yeah.
But, Yogi and who's the other guy? Was it Phil Rizzuto?
Bill Dickey or somebody like that.
Yeah, somebody like that. I didn't realize that they had retired Billy Martin, number one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know how they originally assigned numbers because for a long time, baseball players didn't have numbers.
It was where you were in the batting order.
It was where you were in the batting order. You were number one if you let off. And so Babe Ruth was three, and Lou Gehrig was four.
But then those guys got retired, so Mantle had to be seven, right? And wasn't...
Then it became much more randomized.
Well, Roger Maris was 8, right? Or no, he's not 8. Was he... He's one of them, but he's not 8 because that was Yogi. But Joe Torres he's in there too, as one of the, is he like number 2 or something? Or whatever. But yeah, they've got out of the 9 digits, they have 10 people retired. Sort of like the there can't be many numbers left for the Boston Celtics either, huh?
Well, it used to be you could not go higher than 55 in basketball. Now they'll let you go higher.
Now, do you know why they changed that? I don't. That's a legitimate question. I remember that, and then I remember that was a thing, and I knew why it was a thing. It was so the referee could signal to the scoring table, you know, who did the foul with, you know, two hands.
Yeah.
55. But I never.
Alfonseca, if he were a ref, could have taken him up to 66.
Yes, it could. That does happen.
Well, if you knew your signals from the floor, you could do 66.
I signaled a 9 to somebody last night, and they looked at me like I was crazy.
God, were you on what floor? Did you trade? Where you had the board of trade was all signals, and the CBOE pretty much just confirmed trades by signals, but. The board of trade was, you know, when you were 2 bid, you had the 2 over your head, right? You know, you never really did that in a SIBO because there were so many different options in every pit.
But you did. Euro dollars.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that the whole pit? Everybody, how many different months were traded at the same time in the pit? We have
four. The euro dollars goes out 10 years quarterly.
Was so there a different 40. Spot in the pit for every? You know, couldn't have been too many people trading them out 5 years, were there?
More than you. I mean, you look at the open interest on that thing, you'd be actually very surprised.
Right, because you know,
it was swaps, etc. That was where people would price them, but also hedge them. So if you're hedging a swap that goes out 10 years, you might use a strip of Eurodollar futures.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, while you're
it's just extremely different than the way that a SIBO, you know, the SIBO contracts would be divided up.
Well, in the OEX,
mm-hmm.
everybody knew the people who did the out of the monies. Everybody knew the people who did the out months. I mean, the brokers knew the people who specialized in that stuff because some people didn't want any part of it. I mean, there were so many strikes and there weren't as many months and it wasn't days like now, but. But everybody knew if you're going to buy something, you know, 5 strikes out of the money, there were guys that liked to sell that stuff or buy it or something. I mean, that would be one where you'd turn to the people you knew to do that. And there were people who did the rolls. Not everybody did the rolls. So, I mean, that's why when even though it looks like 350 people standing there very close to each other, it looks like just a blob, but it really isn't. I mean, there's people that have, there's brokers, there's traders, there's people that do the out months and people that do... What didn't they on the board of trade? The month was the different steps you were on, right? You could tell what guys were trading.
Yeah, that's where the nickname Mr. Top Step came from. But yeah, that's kind of how you could tell what the front month was, etc.
But one of the other differences is the brokers that had all the paper in the CBOE were in the bottom of the pit, so you had to get your spot down there either through longevity or. Size. It took you a while to work your way down there. The board of trade, the brokers were on the top step, so they could see the booth. So the guys who didn't trade very much, the schlumps were in the bottom of the pit, right?
Yeah,
it was, you know,
that's just, how we that was my experience.
No, you were at the old CME building. You weren't over here,
right?
The one over in Wacker,
right?
Cool.
But before they had 2 floors.
Hey, what do you guys? I got the boat is. Are there any new directives with the 2 schools that you guys in? It's just any new programs where people can go back and forth between the two, or it's just all the same? It seems like it was pretty smooth to start with.
Not sure what you're asking.
Well, you were saying a lot of your guys end up in Indiana and those kinds of things, and a lot of people from the high schools are now getting a head start into your place at Ivy. And you see, didn't you say Purdue or somebody got added to the mix or somebody did? Is that still every year? Does it get a little better, or is everybody, you know, in Illinois, it doesn't seem like we're doing anything like that. We probably are, but
it changes. This is tight budget year.
Yeah, if anything, it would be going the other direction with what's going on with the state of Indiana.
I don't.
It's a tight budget for all the public colleges. And I don't want to like I had a small adjustment for the way, you know, for the retirement matching because our budgets are tight. So it's not a good year for expansion. And I think where you're going with that one is I feel like there should be a feeder track into Kelly from Ivy Tech. For like maybe a certain number of students, but I haven't been able to get that I haven't been able to get enough buy-in on that one. And my idea behind it is we would like more Kelly graduates to stay in the state of Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Ivy Tech students are mostly from the state, so that would be a good way to solve that issue, but also maybe find some really talented people and that are from the state and that will stay in the state that could be a Kelly.
By the way,
now, we do have a very specific business program that does where the credits, for any grade C or better, the credits will transfer into every Indiana public school. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the difference being that Kelly is much more selective about who they admit than, say, Ball State or IU South Bend or any of those. So the credits will come in. The question is, are we feeding the right people to you? And one of the challenges that we have, of course, is that, and you'll see it as undergraduate at Kelly too, is that a lot of people are going to come from high school and they really aren't well prepared for college. So it will show up in a lot of places, and it's one of the challenges. It's one of the challenges we deal with in the business program. Now, I've been teaching in the business program a lot less and been way more supply chain and IT focused lately. And that's a little bit different, but in the supply chain world, I get a lot of working adults, and that's a whole different kind of not prepared, but very adaptable. If you haven't been to school since high school 20 years ago, then that's a whole different process of making them into college students than I get with a guy who came out of high school and just. You know, the school system just wasn't that good and didn't prepare them very well.
Did you guys hear?
And that's not every school system, by the way. You know, the ones I may get, you know, Penn High School in Mishawaka, which is a very highly regarded school, are going to be different than the ones I might get from
another district. Don't say it.
Yeah, another district, or the school corp or something.
Did you guys happen to hear your? As you guys are forward-thinking, forward-looking, I'll say a throwback Hoosier. Evidently, Indiana still likes killing people and death penalties. So the outrage last year was they put three people to death, evidently. And since the drugs, nobody wants to make the drugs anymore, the drugs come down to 300,000, essentially, a shot. So they smoked three people, and it was $900,000. So one of your state legislators, when I say neither one of you live in Indiana, but one of the Indiana state legislator, must be like a throwback to God knows where, he's outraged. I think he was on the floor of the the legislative building, saying, this is outrageous. We have to go back to firing squads and hangings. We got to make this cheaper so we can smoke more people. I'm sitting there listening to this guy going, where the hell is he? He's got to be Southern Indiana. Where did that guy come from?
I don't know, but that's a really, really interesting leap from education.
Yeah,
you're doing quite a segue. You know, we had a guy that ran for mayor in Memphis Memphis has very similar issues to Chicago, like with respect to murder rates, etc. He wanted to bring back a guillotine and use one of the amphitheaters in Memphis to do public executions to deter all that. He's the kind of guy I should be talking to you about at the bar and not necessarily on the radio about, because he was an interesting, quirky fella.
I'm going to say that neither one of those guys were in your class.
No.
Hey, well, you know, the...
One thing before you get away from education, an opportunity. I probably have a little bit more flexibility to do this than Russell might. But right now, I'm pursuing some opportunities, saying, you know, if we're going to have tight budgets, and a big part of my job is reaching, you know, is really tied to the community. It's tied to, you know, what's a community need. Is we're looking at some boot camps in, you know, in different types of areas. So, you know, I may not be bringing in IT people for, you know, especially working professionals who already have a lot of credentials. I may not be bringing them in for a degree program of any kind or an academic credential. But on the other hand, let me have them for 2 days, because I have some really, really good cybersecurity tools and simulations where I can take them through some really good cybersecurity training. I can do some things with project management training. And then on top of that, I can do some things with cohorted programs for businesses that are just focused on a 6-course certificate program. And so, you know, that my emphasis right now in terms of the initiatives I'm trying to push have a lot to do with adding revenue for the school and for my campus, because I know that, you know, we got hit pretty good on the budget side.
Yeah, but listen,
on the expense side.
Don't go down the road too far here if you guys can't. Are you legally, are the public schools free to fundraise?
Sure.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of the stuff, when Dr. J's daughter went to, I don't know, she went to Latin or Park or one of those places, not only did you have to pay the tuition, you had to show up enough fundraisers, like another $5,000 or something. I mean, could either one of your places have like a business roundtable where you invited people in from all the supply chain and all the other kind of stuff in a big convention hall and charge, you know, $500 to get in and listen to all these people talk and stuff? I mean, you could do that, right?
Oh yes, you know, and, uh-huh. That, and when I talk about boot camps, I'm really talking about hands-on training. But yeah, I could have a leadership series, a data security series. I could do I could probably do AI stuff, much especially if I want to really piss off Carl. Although I am totally with him on some of the stuff you guys have been talking about, the last week or so. In fact, it was kind of interesting because I was reading something about, and this is really shifting gears, but they have some of these models now use something called chains of thought to reason based on things that, you know, the materials that they have. So when you're talking about how could I make up something that Carl Denninger said, it's just saying, well, I have his full chain of thought, so I can extrapolate that into what he probably would have written.
You sure you want Carl's full chain of thought?
Carl's stream of consciousness is always pretty interesting.
Oh, it is. Well, I guess I always dig into the stupid numbers. If you did that or Russell did that, who gets the money? Does it stay in your department, Kevin, or would you have to kick it to the general budget of the school, or what?
Well, actually, the way we're organized, we have a group that organizes things with the businesses, and then the revenue's probably going to go into their bucket, and then they would contract with me, so they would actually pay me specifically to do whatever it is in addition to whatever it is in addition to the my normal contract. They'd pay me personally for that.
But if it made $50,000, you don't get the $50,000.
See that go into the School of Business, IT, logistics, etc., entrepreneurship. Would I like to see that money go into that bucket? Yeah, but you know, I'm coming out of a long career in the business world. I ultimately don't care. And especially at my age, I suppose if I wanted all kinds of credits so that I could be a star and grow up to be the vice chancellor or the chancellor of my campus or something like that, then yeah, but I'm 70 years old. I'm not career building at this point. So I'm really just saying, hey, if we're tight on cash, and if the budget's really tight, let's see if we can do something for the revenue engine so that we actually do have a little more funding at our disposal. I don't care where it comes from.
Well, it's all, it drives you into the fact that who's in charge of that checking account. Those, I mean, I wonder, like, when you see all the stuff going on at, you know, really at every school, but one of my buddies last summer had his son went to Notre Dame. I think they had some kind of a, you know, baseball sort of tournament slash camp where they played some games, but then all of a sudden it was a lot of stuff with the coaching staff there, and it was a lot of dough. And I'm wondering if that goes to the baseball team where the coach can dispense it. I doubt it. If his name gets on a checking account, if it goes into the general fund, does it go in the baseball fund, would separate from the general athletic fund? I mean, kind of wonder how it's all set up. I mean, that doesn't matter, but I'm just kind of curious.
Well, yeah, and Russell might have some thoughts on this too, but again, yeah, there are different buckets where places go, just like in any organization. And I'll give you an example, because I was just talking about this in class yesterday. We're talking about if you work for a let me give a more generic example, because this, I don't want to get specific, because I'm actually, this was a group of students from a specific company, so we won't get into that. But if you go back to my banking days, a lot of times the commercial banking people would be, you know, ringing me up and saying, you know, this is a really, really good customer who happens to sell computers or network equipment or networking services. This is a really, really good customer, and I wonder if you would do business from them or buy from them. And my answer always was, I will be happy to give them a shot at our business, but I'm taking the best deal, which might be the lowest cost, and it might be the lowest, you know, lowest total cost of ownership or whatever. And so if you really want me to do business with your good customer to the detriment of my budget, I would be glad to consider it, but that extra money I'm charging to you as a cost. Now you tell me, with this extra cost, is it still such a good customer?
And that's why Kevin's not an alderman.
Well, it could be, but my point of saying that is, because of where things go, because of how you do the accounting for it, you can get some really perverse incentives based on how your accounting system is designed, because all that would just show up as a cost center, as opposed to an offset to the revenue for the commercial bankers. And yet, if you looked at the bank as a whole, you know, you would say it's detrimental. You know, it dilutes the value of that relationship. So, you know, I think I get what you're asking about the accounting system, and it does matter, and it does create some strange incentives. I just think those are conversations. Now, you know, at an executive level, I could have those same conversations with my counterpart in commercial lending, and that was, you know, we'd always work it out. That could get contentious at times, but we would always work it out. And ultimately, what I'd say is, I'll give your people a fair shot. I'll give your customers a fair shot. Happy to do that anytime you want. But I'm not necessarily going to do business with them.
Russell, why do I have this view of Rodney and Caddyshack, where he's giving the guy the cash? Says, keep it fair, keep it fair.
you can't make that fly at a lot of companies. The one I'm thinking of in particular, the one situation I'm thinking of in particular, we had a really good functional management team, but that doesn't work everywhere. And so, you know, when you're talking about product returns, you know, and you're in a business-to-business model, and they're returning products that we suspect that the customer damaged it and just said, well, just send it back to them, they'll cover it. That, you know, you get a push from the sales side to approve all those. And I said, good, if I can take it out of your sales hide, then fine, I'll be happy to make them a new one and replace it. But if I have to take it out of my own hide and it's not my fault, what the hell are we doing here? So it's, you know, and some places sales has the clout. They're just going to say, you know, we're all about revenue, so just keep it flowing. We don't want to piss off the customer. Okay, fine. Just make sure we account for it properly. We're accounting for your decisions, you're paying.
What do you mean account for it properly? You got a column that says graft?
No, I'm not talking about graft. Well, what I am saying, though, is, you know, if I ship you a washing machine and it doesn't work and I have to pay to ship it back, get it out of there, and then I have to pay to replace it, how much money did I spend selling you one washing machine?
Well, by the way,
I spent more than twice as much as I should have spent. So, you know, that's all I'm saying is, you know, I'll own up to my own quality issues, and I will absorb that cost, and that's my incentive to really get my, you know, to get it right and to make everything right the first time. That's my incentive. But if it's, you know, if it gets delivered to my home, I use it for a month, and I just am totally abusive to it, or I have a terrible water system, whatever it is that's going to screw it up, and then I say, well, you know, manufacturer has deeper pockets, just send it back to them. No, I'm not doing that. You know, we have warranties for a reason, and if you voided the warranty, we're gonna have to deal with that.
Well, there you go. So, are you back in class today?
I have two classes today. I have an afternoon and an evening. Yep.
Good for you.
Yeah, I was back. I was actually in and back in the classroom yesterday, which was great.
Good for you. Good for you. I'll talk to you on Friday. Russell, what's going on in the world?
Yes, sir. And, well, just what we were just talking about, Kelly has executive education that does a lot of different types of programs. And
similar. Yeah, very much the same as me doing it at a root level, you know, a lower level of the organization. Yep.
Do you have the traditional executive program, the Friday 1 week, the Saturday the next, like they all started like that?
Things like that. We have like every – I do one that is it's finance for CEOs, really, just kind of to help them brush up, make sure they understand, you know, the reports that are being presented to them. And it's four Fridays, and I do that one, and I get a nice little I get a little check for doing. I don't even get paid not that I should get paid like I've taken on a full extra class, but so it's not something that I do. I honestly don't do it for the pay. I do it because it gets me exposure to CEOs.
This is for the CEOs that actually get the job and then wonder what is the CEO supposed to know.
And some of it becomes a two-way conversation, which I think is great. You know, this is what I'm teaching the people that report to you. You know, what do you guys want to see? What should I be doing differently on my end as well? That's not the beginning of the class, but that's where we end up toward the end.
Well, that sounds like fun. I bet you get some good people.
Oh, the people I interact with, you know, I don't do this, but I think it's the way to illustrate it. You know, if I was making a pro con list about, you know, working at Kelly, the students would be way the heck up on the pro list.
Well, when my boss at Allied Van Lines was in the executive program at University of Chicago, it was a Friday to Saturday. I think my stepfather had to be in like one of the first years of that, because he graduated that when I graduated high school. So
wow.
that was way back. But
and that's, you know, that's not common back in the day.
I think University of Chicago might have been first with that. And
no, but that's just very impressive on his part. That's what I meant by that.
Yeah. Because he ended up having some of the same teachers that I did when I was there.
That's fantastic.
You know, 8 years later or four years later. And but the guy at Allied said that on Friday night, the teachers and some of the students would all just pile over to Martini's afterward. There was a bar named Martini's right near there. And they'd head over there and, you know, hoist a couple. And he goes, that's when you learned a lot about business and what other people were doing. And the professors learned a lot about business. And so they were characters, some of those professors. But you can only imagine that. I mean, but what a lot of stuff going on in the world. Kevin and I and, well, the rest of us, we've been talking a lot about the the Epstein stuff on a bunch of different levels, and a lot of it is the management, the money, the creepiness, who the people are. Is it worth a full bore investigation? Do you follow the money? And on, you know, a lot of different levels, I'm very pissed off. I don't know if I was in Trump's situation or anybody's in that spot, would it be worth a six-month investigation where you know it's going to land on the heads of a lot of people you probably don't want it to, but by the way, maybe it should. I mean, it's on many levels, it's one of the most interesting problems that I've ever come across, because, like I've said 100 times now, in my business, it bothers the bejesus out of me that we have to make sure if you open up an account tomorrow that you know, you wired money in, that it comes from the right account, it comes from this.
Yeah.
We essentially become the police force. And oh, by the way, as I mentioned to Kevin, if you sold one of your old cars, I don't know if you have any, for $15,000, you're somewhat of a leper. We won't take your money. A bank's going to have one person checking out your bottom hole and the other two of your armpits when you bring that money into the bank, and where'd you get it?
Oh, yeah.
Other people above
$10,000 cash.
Yeah.
And they report it to the government for
you.
Well, don't
think for a second that every single cash transaction is not reported. So if you do $8,000 2 months in a row, they're on you. Because now you're guilty of getting around a law you may not even have known about.
I worked as a bank teller for a little while in college, and there was a construction guy that would bring in just under 10 very often.
Okay.
But it was kind of a consistent thing, and I think he was really just moving money around to try to stay ahead of check float, I think. That was the nefarious thing he was doing with that, but we kept up with it like we were supposed to.
But I'm saying
you would internally keep up with anything over, and I'm not going to say what bank I worked at, cuz I'm probably going to get the number wrong, but I feel like we internally kept up with anything over 3, but we had to report anything over 10.
When I used to have the dear departed Scruff, my little dog Scruffy.
No,
that was, by the way, that was not a name; it was more of a description that became a name. But I used to walk Scruff, and this one lady in the neighborhood, she used to walk her little dog Puck.
Uh-huh.
And talk about not. Careful, you judge a book by its cover, right? You know, very, very pleasant lady, was, you know, not maybe past a little middle age. You know, didn't just look like a regular person. And turns out she was like a champion rower. And she was a bank, put in regulation stuff for banks. We got talking about it one day, because Puck and Scruff were good pals. And she says, I said, well, yeah, you got to give everything over $10,000. She goes, don't buy that for a second. Every transaction, if you do 4 or 5 in a 6 month period that add up to over 10, people know about it.
Yeah.
But my point is, people, I don't care if you're on the right or on the left, every time you come to PTI and all of a sudden, oh no, we don't do cash, we don't do this. Well, why, if it's coming from a third party, we can't take it. By the way, if you found your dad's paper currency and in a NASDAQ stock, we won't take it. What do you mean you won't take it? You don't realize that you're a money launderer because you have a stock certificate. What are you talking about? My dad wasn't a money launderer. He's been dead for 10 years. I mean, the intrusiveness that every person goes through. And then,
I know.
And then everybody looks at this, and then what did the one senator said? What, there's a 4,100 wire transfers with $1 billion in one account, and nobody looks at it. People, I think, are just, there's nothing you can do about it. It's not like we're going to go get a sandwich sign and start walking up and down the street. But people are raged at this stuff. It's not about, well, it might be the creep factor with Trump because he's in a lot of these pictures of these young girls, but I don't think on one level, it's just creepy. All these old guys wandering around with these young girls, even if they didn't do anything to them, which I think a lot of them did, but I don't know that, and I don't know who it would be. But just the idea that we don't pay any attention to any of the rules above a certain level of people. I think people are really ticked off at that. I think it's one of the reasons why...
No, that there's completely... I think it's something that we've all always believed or just kind of known that, you know, I don't want to say people are above the law, but, you know, there are people that just kind of live their lives a bit differently because they're extremely wealthy. And you just kind of acknowledge that. not completely above the law, but yeah, I'll give you kind of a silly example. You know, Steve Jobs would never get a license plate for his car. And because there's a law apparently there's a law in California that you don't have to have your plate for the first 3 months. So he would just buy a new car every 3 months. Well, at a certain point, you know, the cops in his town knew that was Steve Jobs. They weren't even going to bother pulling him over without the plate.
You know, don't you have to have a temporary plate that the dealer gives you?
I'm telling you the story. So just go with the story part of it.
All right.
So he would always drive a car without a license plate, and they just reached a point where they stopped pulling him over because, you know, and that's kind of like, okay, you know, he was super rich. He's a little quirky. He's living his life in a way that's kind of skirting the law, you know. And I do believe that we all feel like, you know, super rich people get away with a lot of things that the rest of us couldn't. But this is systematic and blatant and disgusting.
Yeah, and it's,
you know, and so and it tugs at when you know the core of everything that's going on, you know, some of the things that are going on. It just starts to, it just makes your stomach turn. And for some people, I think it's the money part, you know, more than anything else. For me, it's not. It's the bad stuff, you know, on the island, et cetera. But there are different people that are upset about different parts of it. What's unique about this one is it seems to be everybody.
Well, it's
both sides. You know, yeah. In fact, I'll have like a really cool thought, and I'm like, man, if the topic comes up on Stocks and Jocks, I can't wait to use this thought. A couple of weeks ago, when the Democrats were really starting to push on this thing, I was wondering, do you think the Democrats are willing to sacrifice the Clintons for the Trumps?
Well,
because both sides are going to get hurt by this. If everything comes out, I think the way they're reacting, the way that they're acting before it, and how neither side will fully push for full transparency, both sides are implicated in this.
Where do you? I've talked about it kind of from both sides of this. I tell you what, this is the first time in a lot of years where the extreme left and the extreme right seem to agree on something.
Yeah, and this is it.
Yeah,
and the extremes are not the mainstream guys that are kind of in office.
Well, the stuff with the girls. I mean, I've seen enough of the pictures and so forth of, you know, the prince with his arm around the 16-year-old and Trump, yeah.
Have you seen a picture of the prince on Epstein's yacht?
No, but I see the one where...
Do you know who he's with?
No, who?
Meghan Markle.
Oh, God.
She may be tied up in all of this as well.
Well, hopefully this isn't AI, because I don't know, you can't believe any of this people saying anymore.
I know, you can't believe a damn thing.
They had to get Trump dancing with a young blonde girl who's like 16 or so.
Uh-huh.
It was Pam Bondi.
Oh, was it?
Well, that's according to this. But here's my... The things that I sort of can understand, Russell, and I don't understand the stuff with the young girls. I don't know the ages. I don't know if these guys did anything, didn't do anything. Whatever. I really don't want to see those pictures if they're there. I mean, let somebody else do that. But
yeah,
this guy Epstein seems to have gotten an awful lot of money awful fast. Now, one of the benefactors seems to have been, not seems, I mean, he's right there, the guy who used to own the companies, including Victoria's Secret. Now, does that make him a pervert? I don't know. I mean, how young were those models when they first got him? Who knows? But the point is, the questions I want to ask, okay, was this Victoria's Secret money? Was it shareholder money? Was it after-tax money, before-tax money? Did he spruce this town home up and charge it as an expense to Victoria's Secret? I mean, these are the kinds of things that I would like to know. Did anybody pay taxes on this crap? Who gave him the $21 million bucks to buy the island? I mean,
my understanding, I feel like when I recall these things that I get a few details mixed up, and there are probably people listening saying, no, that's not right, but I'm trying to get to it.
Neither one of us know any of the evidence on this.
This is one of my understandings. You know, supposedly he was kind of like a money manager, but
what, and I say kind of like.
He was never registered. He was never registered.
And you could do that. And yeah. You can do that legally. You could back then. You could run a hedge fund legally without any kind of registration.
As long as you didn't hold yourself out as an investment advisor or something, as long as you didn't do that. Sure.
But my understanding is he was running a business like that. He was putting people in an index fund and he was charging them 2 and 20. that is my understanding as to, but so he could and so he could invite Joe Blow down to the island, get a video of him misbehaving, and then say, well, you know, I'll keep this to myself, just put $10 million into my fund. And that's how he was getting paid when he was extorting people.
Ah, well.
So, but if you really want to, I really do feel like it's not the visitors to the island. I think you want a list of his investors.
Well, if for instance, what do you suppose the going rate was for? I think a lot of this happened at the Florida one. I've heard this for years, but people from the Middle East fly over, spend the weekend. You know, they got the golf course, they got the pool, they got the girls, they got the booze, they got the shrimp cocktails.
Yeah.
Where exactly, if what's the tab for that? $2 million? Where does that $2 million go, and were taxes ever paid on it? I'm going to say, I would like to see that tax bill. Follow the cash. I mean, you know they would with us. That's the thing that pisses everybody off.
Yeah. No, like I said, some people it's very, very upset about the, you know, the manipulation of the currency or of the, you know, moving money around without properly accounting for it is what I'm trying to say, and that's not currency.
Well, the other one, and then neither one of us are, a couple of the different things that I've said, that the real kicker is not so much the people, that if it turns out that Clinton went to the island, but there's no films of him doing anything, Clinton could say, yeah, I went there, I heard it was a good time, and I realized these guys were doing it, I couldn't wait to get on the launch and get the hell out of there. There's no evidence here, I don't think, God, I hope not, that you're actually going to get somebody for boffing a 14-year-old. I don't think that's...
Honestly, if it's out, you probably can't convict somebody for that. It wasn't in our country.
U.S. Virgin Islands.
But it was his island one of the U.S. Virgin Islands?
I believe so. But right. I'm saying the money, but this guy was saying that the biggest cover-up and the reason why no president, Trump, Biden, you know, I mean, if people say, well, if Trump was involved, Biden would have done something about it. I don't know. I don't think these guys blow the whistle on each other no matter what. Even if they hate each other, there's a
gentleman. Well, and that's where I get my, are you going to throw some people? Without even saying that, you know, I said the Clintons before, but if you look at it and you're like, you got to weigh, okay, I'm going to be throwing some of my guys under the bus.
That's what I'm saying.
That guy.
I don't know.
Is their hatred of Trump so great that they're willing to sacrifice some of their guys?
But Trump is in enough of the stuff already that he's on a scale of 1 to 10, he's a number 9 creep in my opinion. But he always has been. But that doesn't mean you throw him out of the presidency, and it doesn't mean that people maybe didn't know it when they voted for him. I guess what I'm saying is this guy's biggest concern now is that this guy, the person I listen to, is that the involvement of people from Israel and the CIA.
That's why I think we're not allowed to, or why they're
in one of the.
I like to let's put it this way, I like to believe that the reluctance truly has something to do with that, as opposed to just everybody protecting their buddies.
But you and I,
I'm not saying it's true, but I like to believe it.
But you and I and Kevin and Kevin's slightly. He was agreeing. We were agreeing more than we ever have. I don't know. He was a little more willing, shall we say, to have the investigation and just let the chips fall where they may. I don't know that if we really started to do it, and we know we're going to come up with 1,000 names, if four of them happens to be our best friends, I don't know if I want to go there.
If it's so wide ranging and it, if it just touches every, you know, if somehow Epstein was able to weasel in with, you know, every powerful and rich person in the United States, you just got to assume that they're all protecting their own. And right. it what's really interesting about this one is it's not a party line one.
No, it isn't. You know? Well, one of the things I was listening to.
When Trump ran and he said that he was going to release all of the files, the impression that everybody would have around that is, okay, well, then, you know, all the people on it are Democrats. Or Democrats and, you know, Republicans that are on his bad list. You know, but then he gets in office and, you know, it doesn't get released. And all of a sudden,
all right, define,
you know, everybody's like, well, it's everybody, isn't it?
All right, back up a little. Because one of the arguments that Kevin and I always seem to have, and, I'd, you know, whatever, we take a vote on which one of us is right. In my view, from doing the show for 20 years that I've been doing it, between The Score and other places, I'm a firm believer of if you're good, it's not what you say, it's what people hear.
Yeah,
and what you just said is the people on the right, you know, Trump promised this stuff, and people on the left who probably wished Biden would have done it. So, like I say, they're on the same side on this. Russell, nobody wants the stuff disclosed. Do you think the average voter wants the ability to read 100,000 pages of documents? They want the people prosecuted. I mean, Trump can say, I was going to expose this. That's not what people heard.
And
they heard, you're going to find the guilty people and the money, you're going to do something about it. If you went back, I mean, I know Kevin's good at this, and he's absolutely correct. If you went back, you probably never once hear Trump say, by the way, I'm going to not only expose this stuff, I'm going to find out who the knaves are, and I'm going after them. I'll bet he never said that. But people...
I think he just said he was going to release it.
Yeah, but people took the jump. Well, if you're going to release it and there's an obvious crook in there, somebody's going after him. He never said that. Biden never said that. Obama never said that. Right? But yeah. So, okay, here you go, Mr. MAGA, Mr. Progressive. Here's your 48 boxes of legal documents. Go for it. Well, nobody wants that, do they? I don't.
No.
I mean, same thing with the Kennedy assassination.
Aren't we supposed to learn about that?
Okay, now that's another. So you and I may say, I feel stronger about it.
And I'm not playing that game where you know, that side, this side, all that kind of stuff. But I feel like earlier on that we were going to get all of the UFO files, and then they got into office and we didn't get them.
Right.
so there are a lot of those things. You know, they have that initial meeting when you're a newly elected president and the two presidents meet alone. I've always wondered how often the guy that goes in that got elected for the first time and he's sitting in the office and he's like, holy crap, what have I signed on for?
Well, I mean, it's one thing to say, yep. I mean, I'm a little older than you, and I don't know, were you alive when JFK got shot?
Oh, God, no. Man, I was born in 67.
All right, so it's not that far away. It's not like it was 85 or something.
Actually, I thought you were about to ask me about Nixon resigning, because that's one of my earliest memories.
I wasn't going to ask you if you were alive when Lincoln got shot. You know, I mean, I kept it to Kennedy. But I remember that, and he was a hero in the Irish Catholic community.
Oh, I'm sure.
And the day that he got shot, the entire, I was in like fourth grade maybe, every girl in the class was bawling her eyes out. I mean, it was a shot to the heart of anybody.
Yeah.
It was not just a regular day. You couldn't forget that if you were 4 years old. So the idea that people seem to have done this, I'm going to use the term, on purpose, and it wasn't just one loser. But then again, if you and I go down that road, are we really ready? One of the scenes. That everybody should watch. When I say everybody should watch, I mean maybe you should watch, is in The Untouchables, when Kevin Costner, right?
Yeah.
He's here, and he's a Treasury guy, and he bumps into Sean Connery, who's the tough old Chicago cop. He's talking about going after the gangsters, and he starts jabbing him, and he says, was he jabbing with his finger? And he goes, what are you prepared to do? And Costner goes, what do you mean? What are you prepared to do? are you willing to follow this everywhere, wherever it goes? Because Costner is this, you know, naive guy. Not naive, he was a treasury agent. But he was new. I mean, if you say, you know, if you and I are the two-headed monster in the Oval Office, and you say, I really think that a country like ours needs to find out who the hell shot their president. And I say, okay, first thing I'm going to ask is, Russell, my friend, if the name on the top of the page is George Bush, Lyndon Johnson, Allen Dulles, what are you prepared to do? Now, Johnson's dead, probably nobody gives a crap. He was a creepy old dude anyway. You want to lob that on the Bush family? They're still alive. I don't know who's Dulles' family. What if it's five of the biggest names in industry that their grandfather was the guy on this thing, and we're just going to drop this out of open windows on a pamphlet? I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm saying it's not just, you know, somebody, you know, sitting there in his T-shirt drinking a beer. Oh yeah, I'd do that. Maybe you wouldn't if you were the guy. There's a reason why this stuff is not out there, right? It's obviously it's deeper than Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, what are you and I prepared to do? Are we going to take 6 months of our short 4-year term? Because 4 years, as you get older, is pretty short, right?
Oh yeah.
Are we going to take 6 months?
Right. It's going to zip by.
Are we going to take 6 months or a year of our term blowing the country apart over this issue when the country's blowing itself apart over other issues? There's reasons why people make these decisions, they're not just idiots. I mean, somebody's going to say, hey, George Bush is in office, the kid's in office, the last thing I need is to drop a bomb out there that his old man was one of three people behind the assassination. Or maybe people don't even know that, and they say he wasn't. People really don't even want to know that he was one of the architects of the Bay of Pigs invasion. That was a bomb.
When he was at CIA.
Yeah. Anybody want to know what the CIA was like when he was there with Dulles? I mean, what are these two creeps doing? I mean, do we really want one of the videos here that I was looking at? They're naming this Israeli guy in the Epstein stuff, and he was the head of. They didn't say the Mossad. They said the some police group, and he was. He might have been prime minister for a while. Well, he's big buddy Epstein's. Now, do we want to drop that on our ally at the same time they're knocking people off in Gaza and people are pissed off at him anyway?
And that's another part of it is there is a feeling that there might be a, you know, Israeli intelligence connection with all the Epstein stuff.
Well, with all the Arabs coming in there, do you think?
Maybe. You never. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I really hate to. I mean, we know of some people that have been to the island and people that have been photographed with him. But beyond that, we really don't know for sure anything.
We have phone numbers of all kinds of people who went down there. Wired. I'll send you the video. I already did. Does anybody check who those people are? Anybody can get those numbers.
Yeah. We know who was there. I mean, who had gone there, etc. Without going way too far down the hole, I'd just like to hear from his female friend, Ghislaine.
Well, you know, the guy they're sending to talk to her is Trump's attorney, Todd Blanche.
Hey, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Is that his guy that coaches people for him on what to say?
No, he was the...
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Well, he's the guy supposedly in charge of all this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to see on the tax side, if it turns out the guy from Victoria's Secret wrote that off to Victoria's Secret, I got a problem with that.
Mm.
You know, just on the money side, as I said earlier,
different people are upset about this for different reasons.
Well,
there are probably a lot of people that kept it in their pants. That phrase is stuck in my mind for some reason. But still, you know, traveled down there, interacted with him, maybe even gave him money.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another part of it right there. That maybe did things with him that allowed to dodge taxes, et cetera, or money launder or whatever. and not necessarily just did the creepy sex kind of stuff. There's, I'm sure he wasn't into just one bad thing.
Well, the first firm he went to work for, according to this one I was watching last night, his skill set was money laundering. Now, I don't know what kind of management firm that was, but obviously they weren't. They were the guy said, he said on the tape they were never registered. They were never registered investment advisors what do you call the people? The
CTA.
Yeah. Or anything like that. I mean, they clearly weren't a Series 7 or anything like that, like I am. But the how do you have a firm that specializes in money laundering, and meanwhile the auditors are sitting in our place? I mean, I don't, you know, the whole thing.
I know.
Just frost me. But
it's like what's with the application of resources going after all the small guys?
Yeah. But how big is this? Is everybody else is struggling to pay their taxes? And we're having arguments right or to left as to whether tariffs are really a tax, and some of the people on the right don't think it is. I wish you would go take a class from Russell. But by the way, it's a tax on you. It's the biggest tax that's ever been initiated in this country. But I can't explain that to anybody. I don't know how people push back on that, but they do. So we've got this going, and meanwhile, other people don't seem to be paying any tax. And oh, by the way, there's people that sign up, you know. I actually get some accounts, believe it or not. People like what we do for people. People get pissed off when we go through and say, "Oh no, you can't send a check from your joint account for your personal account." Well, what do you mean? Well, no, it's got to be. You actually could send a check, but you can't wire unless it's absolutely the same person as you to the other place. And oh, by the way, we can't wire any money out to your daughter. No, it's got to only go to your. I mean, I think they know it's not
us. And you got to explain it's not your fault.
Yeah, you got to explain it's not your fault. And by the way, you sort of like that to happen, because not that they complain, but you want it to sort of be that way, because it means that you're kind of off the hook. You don't want to send it to the wrong spot.
Right.
But the point is, auditors are in there, they're checking out every single one of those things. How does a guy have 4,100 that nobody looks at? Now, what bank is that, for God's sake?
Maybe he owned a bank.
Well, I'm saying, but about plus, if you're,
was his bank J.P. Morgan?
That I don't know.
Strike that. Strike. I don't know where that came from. So just strike. I don't.
Well, how many? I don't know. Do you? Boy, I don't know enough about. I'm going to guess. Again, I'm lobbing.
He had to have a clearing firm or something like that, didn't he?
I'm putting my little finger in a guillotine here, but I doubt very seriously. If Lakeside Bank would take a wire for me from Abu Dhabi or someplace, I mean,
it would have to be a large multinational bank.
Yeah, would have to have, and how? I mean, the fact is, this money gets around, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And now we got even a top thing on it. Now probably it'd all be in crypto, but even that's traceable if you want to.
That'd be even more difficult to trace.
But you can trace it.
Wouldn't it be really funny if Epstein's crew is the ones that started Bitcoin, and that's the whole thing they're trying to hide?
Well, what do you think happens if? Actually, we got a couple minutes. We seem to have the fight between the president and the Fed, and yet, Hal was on yesterday talking about the increase in the money supply is voracious right now, and that's why the market keeps going up and these prices keep going up, and. You know, it's really interesting. Well, I don't want to go through it again because I did yesterday, and you know what I'm talking about. We have a system where you can essentially create your own money, and the Fed's job is to maintain the water in the pool, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, if you decide to take, if you got $200,000 worth of IBM at PTI, and you call up and say, "Send me a check for 80," and put that in the bank, you've essentially just created 80 grand of money, right? Because not a bank can lend that out, right? Anytime somebody gets a loan, essentially from a bank, and puts it in another demand deposit account, that becomes money.
Yeah.
So, the Fed's job is to maintain that water in the pool, either by dragging money out or by putting money in. And I don't know if you've noticed, Russell, but doesn't it seem odd to you that the money supply is going up almost like 6% a year, which you and I both know is not fighting inflation at all.
It's not sustainable.
Yeah, and it's doing exactly what Trump essentially wants him to do is put more money in the system. He just isn't. He actually has already lowered the interest rate from 4.5 to 4.75 down to 4.25 to 5, without saying he has. So if Trump looked at what he actually has done, he's doing what he wants him to do. But that still doesn't get you on the insult page. What I'm saying with if you notice, the Fed has managed to increase the money supply fairly dramatically while their balance sheet is coming down. And you and I would sit there and go, how do you do that? Well, you do that because the money supply is growing so naturally on its own. Every time these stocks go up every day, there's more money available to borrow, right? Now, my question to you...
That's why I find it funny that Trump is all over Powell the way that he is.
Because he gets mileage from that by insulting people.
Yeah.
I mean, all these countries.
I don't think insulting Powell helps him. I really don't.
Well, but what about all the countries? I have people on the show that I think are pretty darn smart, are absolutely believing the part that we got to bleep with Japan. They're really an enemy. What do you mean an enemy? Well, we got to this tariffs. We got to screw these guys.
Enemy again.
What?
When did they become an enemy again?
Well, but trade wise, I said, well, you know.
Well, I feel like they were, but it was 30 years ago. I feel like we work pretty well with them now.
But everybody likes to give their own people an advantage, right?
Yeah,
we do too. But it's hard for me to say, well, you know, they don't have a tariff on cars, so why? You know, I mean, it's hard to say. For instance, Switzerland is a big is an enemy when they don't have any tariffs. Yet we got to screw them because look what they're doing to us. It doesn't look to me like they're doing anything to us. I mean, but he's pretty good at making somebody an enemy who really isn't, and then saying he's going to solve the problem. The wealth that has been created by Bitcoin and the rest. I've got it pushing $2 trillion. Is this almost like a shadow money supply that people are borrowing against that? And that's why the Fed, if they really want to cut the money supply down to a 2% growth from 6, I think they have to start selling crap off that balance sheet so fast to make your head spin. I think for them to maintain that number right now would be very difficult because the money supply is growing on its own. Or do you think I'm totally nuts on this?
No. I think you're dead. I think you're dead on that one. I was just trying to visualize the two moving parts around that one. But yeah, that totally,
because otherwise you'd say, how is the Fed balance sheet going down every month, which means they're letting stuff run off or they're actually selling stuff. How is that going down when the money supply is going up? And the answer is, it's not going down fast enough to keep the water in the pool where they want it, right? Or where they say they want it.
You got a fire hose pumping into it and you got a garden hose pumping out.
Right. Good analogy, by the way.
Do what?
Good analogy, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. That happens every once in a while.
So, you know, when I go for my nice long walk every Saturday morning and early on before it gets hot and run into all the people, every single time I see somebody walking a Frenchie, I think of you.
Yeah. Do you?
Yeah.
I just yell Frenchie at them.
And most of the little guys all really like me. They're pretty friendly little dudes. I haven't come across any who don't like me. Other dogs don't necessarily like you all that much, but they all of a sudden they're at your leg if you're petting them. They love it, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not exactly a fierce breed.
They're more than happy to fight with things smaller than themselves.
Well,
we spend half the summer buffer making sure that our French bulldog's not taking out any of the bunny rabbits in our yard.
Oh, Audrey's got the same issue with the poodle.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to kill anything, but she keeps like nosing them and playing with them, wondering what's going on with these guys.
I'm going to tell you that my French bulldog is a stone cold murderer.
God.
She'll pick a bunny up, spin it around in the air, and then she goes right back to sleep like 30 seconds later. No conscious whatsoever.
Well, Scruff, if he ever could have caught one, when he got old, he couldn't see very well. All of a sudden, like, we'd see a rat when I'm out for a walk, and I go, Scruff, see that guy? He'd take off running for maybe, 10 yards, and the rat would take off, and his tail's wagging. I go, Scruff, you still got it. That guy wanted no part of you. With the, terrier dogs, they just grab them, shake them till they're dead, and just drop them. They don't want to eat them.
That's what that. Yep. That's always a fun. And we're the cleanup crew.
Yeah. Well, at least they don't bring them back in the house. I mean, good Lord.
Oh no, they brought me one.
Oh man.
my everybody was out of town and I was on dog duty all week for myself, and I'm sitting on the couch and I look over and they brought me something.
Well, my real
talk about that, I was like, are you kidding with me?
Talk about a dumb animal story. One of our first clients way back in the early 90s was quite a character. One of these days when you're on, I'll tell you all about this guy. Very unique, huge developer down in Arizona, and he owned a he originally owned a business in Indiana and owned three islands up in the Bay of the Islands in Canada, right? So anyway, he's got this cat that they love. This cat, it's an old Siamese cat, and the back legs are so messed up the thing could barely walk. Yet the guy'd cook us breakfast, you know, bacon and eggs and all that stuff, and the cat would wolf down breakfast. Then he'd wander off on this island in Canada, which couldn't have been, you know, half a square block. And he comes back with a mouse and drops them at the guy's feet. He goes, how the hell the thing can barely walk? He must know right where they're going to run, hide, and just pounce out when they run by. I mean, somehow he was the best little hunter. Some of them are like that, and some don't care.
He was like a sniper. He sat in the bushes for 2 hours until somebody came by.
You would think a house cat would never be like that, but this guy was. Yeah. Because you got to be careful. It's okay when he dropped them at your feet outside, when he walked in and dropped them in bed with you. All proud that he gave you his trophy, and you're sitting there going, ah! Anyway, SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 9. Russell, are these valuations bothering you?
Very much so.
What does that mean? If you were me and you're...
I had a reporter question yesterday about this, and I'd be looking at... I'd be looking exactly, and this is not just because I'm on your show, I'd be looking exactly at things exactly like you do, where you... You protect some downside one way or another. The interview was about ETFs and ETFs that use options, and I said I think the best use of those types of ETFs is the ones that'll, you know, sell a call and buy a put to give you some protection, and you sacrifice some upside. But very similar things to what you do, and I'm not just saying that because I'm on your show. That's exactly what I would be doing with stocks.
What,
right now.
What do you make of the run up? Is similar to, well, I just read some article the other day about similar to 99, but the fact that some of these stocks have gotten so big that you almost can't invest without buying them. I mean, if somebody comes in today to be a client and wants to put...
I know what you mean. It's like there was a pretty mid-sized investment firm down in Atlanta that refused to buy Apple. And after not doing that for 4 or 5 years, they basically were going out of business.
Yeah, well.
You couldn't have outperformed without owning Apple. And I feel like NVIDIA is probably one of those stocks right now.
Well,
it's justifiable. I was at a Bloomberg conference yesterday, and they weren't talking about any specific stocks, but they were talking about the AI thing and the data center thing, et cetera. And they were talking about the spending in that area, and the spending, the overall spending that NVIDIA benefits from has been growing rapidly, but it looks like macro-wise in the next year or two, it's going to start to slow down a bit. So I wonder if that is going to, on my list of things to do today is, you know, how much of the AI data center stuff is important to NVIDIA. And, you know, if that's going to slow off, is there some other product segment that's going to kick up, that's going to keep their hyper growth going or not?
Well, they're up to...
You have me all over the fundamentals on NVIDIA now.
What do you think about the $6 a share revenue on a stock trading 170?
I think that, you know, next year that number's supposed to be much higher, and the year after that it's supposed to be much higher. I'm starting to wonder if 3 to 5 years out what's going to happen with them.
Well, next year it's 12, which is huge, which means they double.
Yeah.
And next year it's 24. If the stock stayed at 170 and it grew into it, that would be a beautiful thing. Yeah. But if that means the stock is going to be 300.
Semiconductor companies have really nice margins, too.
Yeah, well, their margin's like 50%. Their earnings are almost 3, and in revenue 6. Their margins are damn high. But I'm saying it's okay mathematically to hope that was going to happen if the stock is 3 years from now still at 170. But nobody wants it there. They wanted it at 400 when
exactly.
Anywho, have a nice week. Are you here or are you in Indianapolis?
I'm here. I was like I said, I was downtown yesterday. I'm here for a couple more weeks.
All right, bud. Well,
alrighty.
We'll talk next week. S&P futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 10. If I go to that car show out in Westmont, I'll let you know.
Yeah, let me know if you're gonna be down the street.
All right, bud. All right. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.